Welcome to We Fish ASA. I am Steve Sarley, and sitting right next to me is my partner, the one and only Dave Kranz. We Fish ASA is always pleased to offer you conversation with the most interesting, the most informative, the most entertaining, as well as some of the biggest names in the world of fishing. We Fish ASA is brought to you by the proud industry members of the American Sport Fishing Association, particularly St. Croix, the best rods on earth, Calcutta, makers of a line of products that fit your fishing lifestyle and passion, Costa Sunglasses, see what's out there, and Daiwa. Take a look at the new Tatula SV Reel and you'll love it as much as we do. You know, you can listen to a new episode of our one-hour podcast each and every week. You can hear it by going to iTunes, the free app at Stitcher Radio, and also at our website, WeFishASA.com. We Fish ASA is recorded and produced at Berserk Productions in Schaumburg, Illinois. Our producer is Brad Nierman. As always, thanks, Brad, for your fine work. On today's show, we're going to visit with a pro from Northern Illinois. Her name is Cheryl Smith. We're going to visit with Liz Ogilvie from the American Sport Fishing Association and Keep America Fishing. Liz has some exceptionally good news for us. And we're going to visit with a Canadian bass fisherman. There's a couple of words you don't hear used in conjunction with each other all the time. But this guy is really a top stick. He's from Canada, just won $125,000 in a big FLW event. His name is Chris Johnston. But first, from St. Croix, the best rods on earth, I'd like to introduce our audience to our friend Cheryl Smith. Hi, Cheryl. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks. Thanks for joining us. You know, you're a very well-known pro in Northern Illinois. You guide, you fish, and I'm going to make no bones about this. You're pretty much known as a walleye fisherman to the best of my knowledge in the realm of our area fishing. And you were asked by my partner, the one and only Dave Kranz, as I just referred to him as, to fish some local tournament circuits as his partner. But Dave is a bass fisherman. He's been fishing bass in local tournaments for a long time. He's making the move up to the FLW Costa Series. You know, Dave's hitting a big-time circuit this year fishing bass. You're a walleye fisherman. Were you surprised to get that call to fish bass tournaments with Dave Kranz?
Yeah, I was at first. I'm excited about it because there's so much to learn. That's why I love this sport, too, because, you know, even though I've mainly fished for walleye, that's my target species. I've, you know, of course, fished for other things, panfish and bass, but obviously don't have the knowledge base that he has on bass, and so I'm really excited to get on a boat with him and learn some new techniques. It'll be fun.
I think it's going to be great. And you know what? I know that when Dave was looking to do this, Dave asked you because he knows you can fish. It's obvious, you talk to anybody, Cheryl can catch fish. And I think that there's something to be based on the fact that fish are fish. If you can catch fish, you can catch fish. It may take a little bit more effort and knowledge and experience to get into the finding them, but right, he's driving the boat. He's running the boat. He's fishing from the front of the boat. You're in the back of the boat. And if he can find fish, I have no doubts that you're going to be able to hook him, catch him, bring him into boats, and you guys are going to do real well. Do you have confidence in this?
I do. I think we're gonna do great together. I've known Dave for quite a few years now, and I think we'd be good to fish together on a boat. And I think I can be pretty confident that I can get some fish in the boat too, and help them out.
I'm thinking. Do you remember when they had the great outdoor games on ESPN? They did a thing where they put a bass fisherman in with a walleye fisherman. And they had to score points in both categories, and they had Denny Brower with Mike Goffron, who's from Antioch, and Mike was the top walleye guy at the time. And they went out for bass first thing in the morning. Then they're on the Madison chain. It was like 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. They're going to fish for walleye. I'm sitting there going, how the heck can you make it walleye in the middle of the day? For Pete's sake, what's going on? And Gofron put Denny on walleye, and they caught walleye, and they won the gold medal. And Denny Brower was like, boy, I can't believe how good this guy is, because Gofron caught bass, and Denny Brower had never really caught walleye, and Mike taught him how. And I kind of look at this as an experiment that's destined for success. I think you can catch fish, and I think this is going to be great, and it'll be your own personal great outdoors game. And I'm going to turn it over to Dave. Talk to your partner and tell us what's going on here.
I had every confidence that Cheryl would be fine fishing for bass. You obviously haven't looked at a Facebook page, because she's got bass up there, she's got walleyes up there, she's got trout up there, she's got pike up there. This lady knows how to fish, and that's good. She's also represented her brands as a pro staffer, with one of our best friends, the best rods on earth, St. Croix. And I asked Croix about it before I even asked her. I said, hey, what would you think about if I asked Cheryl to fish these local tournaments? And they thought it was a great idea. So I don't even know if you knew that, Cheryl, but I got the thumbs up from St. Croix before I even asked you if to see if you wanted to do it.
Yeah, Rich told me that in the booth. I thought that was great, too.
No, it was great. And we'll have
both,
fun.
I mean, we both support St. Croix Rods in Iowa, so I think it's a great team up.
Absolutely.
Sure.
The brands are the same, and it's a team effort out there. It doesn't matter who's running the boat or not running the boat.
Right.
As Steve said, when you put somebody who knows how to catch fish in an area where they're at, and there's not a whole lot of difference between finessing, jigging a walleye or drop shotting or there's a lot of techniques that are so similar. It really doesn't make any difference. And as a matter of fact, I caught quite a few walleyes last year while I was fishing for bass.
Yeah, I've done the same thing. Fishing for walleye, I've caught bass. That's why I say, when people put me in that box of a specific species, it's hard, because you're always going to catch other species no matter what you're fishing for, but they're all fun to catch. And like I said, I'm excited to learn some different things that I haven't done in a while or haven't done ever. And I know you have that knowledge, and I think that's great.
No, it's going to be fun.
I think that's one of the best things about this industry is you never stop learning. There's always something else to learn from somebody else. And that's what I love about the sport.
I have fished out of the front of the boat since I did it 2 years out of the back. It's always made me feel uneasy to think you're a boater or a non-boater. It's like you're still going in the boat, so I don't know how you'd be a non-boater, but you're still in the boat. And I fished 2 years out of the back, and then I bought my first bass boat, and I fished out of the front since 1996, and I never looked back. But it's been fun. But I have learned from every person that has been in the back of my boat when we did the Pro-Am series. And you see somebody pull out, I remember I had a co-angler that was fishing out of the back of my boat, and we were fishing slop and weeds, and he was throwing a spinnerbait into small basketball-sized pieces of opening in the slop, and I thought, he had three fish so fast, I learned something that day, and I learn every time I go, and if I don't, I figure I ought to take up golf, because there is no doubt that you're going to learn every time you go, and it's going to be fun, and it's going to... It'll be different. Fishing on the home water there and then getting to travel this year is a good thing. But I think we talked about, we could actually do a whole segment on the psychology of fishing as a boater or a non-boater and what you have to do to try to win. Because as a team, you're both, every bass counts or every walleye counts towards the team. But when you're doing a pro-am thing, your fish counts against the guys or ladies in the back of the boat, and the other ones are in the front of the boat. So that's a little different. But for what we're going to do, we're just trying to bring five bass to the weigh-in.
Hey, Cheryl.
Right.
Cheryl, yeah. I have ultimate respect for what you do, and I'll be real honest, and I hope Dave doesn't kick me hard, but you spend more time on the water than Dave does.
He's working.
he's working. He's got a very successful retail operation.
And he does.
You work too. You work too. But I know you're on the water a lot. You're ice fishing a lot. As soon as the ice was gone, boom, you're out on the water again. I'm following you on Instagram and Facebook, and I know you're on the water a heck of a lot. So you know a lot of stuff, and you know what's working at the time. So you're in the boat. You're in the boat with Dave, and it's Dave's boat. And he's in the front of the boat, and he's running the boat, taking your place. And Dave says, "Okay, Cheryl, put out a watermelon Senko and do this." And and in your head is telling you, you know, watermelon Senko, I don't think so. I want to use a motor oil drop shot rig here and do that. Do you say, Dave, I respect the fact that you're a professional, but not happening. I'm doing it my way. How do you get around that, you know?
Well, I mean, the waters that we're going to be fishing, I'm not really familiar with, so I'm listening to Dave. If he's catching fish using it, I'm going to use it. If we're not catching consistent fish, then I think, in my humble opinion, that it's good for us to be using different things to figure out what they want at that moment in that body of water. But I'm there to listen to Dave, so I don't want to rock the boat, so to speak.
You can't do any wrong. Everything will be fine.
Have you figured out that I'm already trying to cause a fight in between you two before you even get in the first tournament?
That's probably not going to happen, but everything will be good. It'll work out great, and looking forward to
the season. I think it's exciting, and I'm dying to follow it. I think it'll be really good. And, hey, come on, seriously, you guys are fishing with St. Croix rods. How can you not catch fish? That's half the rods are going to do half the work to begin with.
The best rods on earth.
And I do have to say, Dave has the best selection of St. Croix rods probably in the country. I even asked Dan Johnson about that from St. Croix. I'm just like, is there anyone that has more St. Croix rods in their store than him? He's like, honestly, I don't think so. I send as many people to your store in Crystal Lake just so they know to get their hands on them if they can't make it to the trade show.
Well, you know, I definitely to be able to appreciate handle that. It.
That is fantastic. Yeah. Well, you know what, Cheryl Smith? I enjoyed having you on. We're gonna do this again. And the next time, we're going to talk about how big a check you and Dave collected in the tournament that you just fished or whatever. Because I know you guys are gonna do great. And I'm going to be really interested in hearing, following your season, about how you guys do and the little things you run across that might influence the average person, because I think it's great you guys are fishing together, and I know there's a lot of people that would like to try tournament fishing. You have a boat, but there's people that don't have boats that would like to be a co-angler or a partner or whatever, and maybe don't have the willingness to go out there and put themselves out to get into it and ask somebody, hey, can I share the boat with you? I think that you guys doing this together is going to be inspirational for a lot of people. There's a lot of local and regional tournaments, and that's where everybody gets started. And I think you guys are leading the way and going to inspire a lot of people. And I'm looking forward to following it throughout the season. I wish both of you the best of luck.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think we're going to have a lot of fun, definitely.
Excellent. She is our new friend, Cheryl Smith, Dave Cran's new fishing partner. We'll be checking up on them throughout the season. Dave Cran's and his partner, Cheryl Smith. That was brought to you by our friends at St. Croix, the best rods on earth. We Fish ASA. We'll be right back.
Don't miss the Progressive Insurance Northwest Sports Show, March 22nd through 25th at the Minneapolis Convention Center. Save on boats, fishing, hunting, and outdoor gear, travel, and ATVs. Buy tickets at northwestsportsshow.com. The Sports Show.
You have a tackle box filled with scissors, nail clippers, knives, and snippers for cutting different kinds of fishing line? Well, throw them all away. Instead, use the Stingray Line Cutter. It's quick, easy, and effective. Mount it on your tackle box, the side of your boat, or wear it around your neck. The Stingray line cutting system cuts all lines and never fails. It's got double stainless steel blades, it's built to last, and it's affordable. Find out more at www.stingraylinecutter.com.
Bass anglers have heard it all when it comes to manufacturers having the best casting reel. Well, Daiwa can back it up with the Tatula SV. The Tatula SV has three key features that make it the most versatile casting reel on the market today. The SV spool is a lightweight aluminum spool, allowing for long control, light lure casting. Mag 4Z gives you the option to set a precise casting range no matter what lure or wind situation. The Daiwa T-Wing system reduces line angle and friction when casting. distance, control, and finesse like no other reel on the market. Tatula, the ultimate finesse long cast system designed by Daiwa.
Costa, we've been on this journey since 1983. Born from necessity on Florida's coast, we're a high-performance eyewear maker obsessed with the evolving technology of our products, protecting the environments where our gear is used, and inspiring people to see what's out there. Costa.
Welcome back. This segment of We Fish ASA is brought to you by Calcutta, an outdoor company that builds gear and apparel for those with a passion for the outdoors. Talk about getting the big names. Here's one of the biggest. She is not only the director of Keep America Fishing, she's the chief marketing officer for the American Sport Fishing Association. We love having her on. She always brings us great information. She is our friend, Liz Ogilvie. Welcome, Liz. How are you?
I'm doing great, Steve and Dave. How are you guys?
Doing good.
You know, I was thinking about it this week. It's starting to get warm here in northern Illinois. I was cleaning a couple tackle boxes over the weekend, thinking maybe I should go out and down to the pond, throw a couple lures today. And I said, isn't this wonderful to be able to be out and going fishing? And then I thought about it. I said, the only reason I'm going fishing is because Liz Ogilvie is in charge of Keep America Fishing. She is keeping me fishing. Thank goodness for Liz Ogilvie. What a great thing to be responsible for.
Well, thank you. There's a lot going on in the world of fishing right now, and I'm glad to be able to be on today to share some fun, good news with you guys.
Excellent. The floor is yours.
All right. So, you know, one of the things that we talk about here and I bring to your show is, you know, we're always talking about sort of the legislative side of what we're doing and the politics of fishing. And something a couple of years ago we all noticed, and not only in the fishing association world, but in other outdoor recreation associations, the boating groups, the recreational vehicle groups, the snowmobiling groups, we're all going down the halls of Congress and we're all having these meetings with legislators talking about how important outdoor rec is and our particular industries are, how big we are, how much people spend in economics, how many jobs there are. And every time we do that, we are doing it for our individual industries instead of doing it all together. So a couple of years ago, all of the outdoor groups got together and said, well, why don't we talk as one industry? Because we don't do outdoor recreation activities in silos like fishing and camping and all those things. We do them together. So why don't we start talking about them together? So we created a group and to address that. And one of the biggest things we wanted to challenge was the fact that outdoor recreation isn't counted as part of our gross domestic product, as an economic driver. It never has been. And we're always saying that we are an $887 billion industry, and we're presenting facts and figures to these legislators, and they're kind of looking at us like, yeah, whatever. And the reason is because we were never officially counted by the federal government. So back in 2016, we got a bill passed called the Outdoor Recreation Jobs and Economic Impact Act, which we call the REC Act. And what that act does or did was call for the federal government to annually measure the outdoor recreation economy and the industry's contribution to our national gross domestic product. So this is putting outdoor rec, all of the things that are produced here in the United States, what that wholesale value is, and what percentage of GDP we contribute. So that study was actually finished in February. And the study was released to show how big we are. And quite frankly, we were all pretty surprised. And the Bureau of Economic Analysis, who did the study, which is underneath the Department of Commerce, they were pretty surprised. Because it ends up that outdoor recreation accounts for 2% of our gross domestic product in this country. That's $373 billion. And not only that, but they also tally up the growth of our economy. And outdoor rec in 2016 grew 3.8%, which compared to the overall economic growth of all other industries studied, those are only 2.8%. So we're growing faster as a sector than other sectors like agriculture and travel and oil and gas and energy. We also had an increase in the amount of expenditures and products that were being produced, an increase of an average of 4.4% in the past 5 years. The overall economy is only growing at 3.6%. So we are doing, you know, amazingly well as an industry. And for the very first time, we're being counted, we're on the board, and people are really starting to pay attention to that. The benefit of that is when we do go and we fight for priorities in the outdoor recreation space, in things like the Farm Bill and the Highway Bill, that's where a lot of our expenditures of conservation dollars and infrastructure dollars, they're all kind of hidden in these big, broad bills. We can now come to the table and say, and knock on the door and say, you know, we're here. Pay attention to us. We are legitimate. So we're really, really excited by what's happened and hope that it certainly makes a difference going forward.
I'm totally stunned by those numbers. I truly am, and feel rather proud to be involved in an industry that is such a big gosh darn deal in this country. You know, I always would tell people, you know, fishing's a big deal. There's more people that fish than play tennis. There's more people that fish than play golf, and you throw out those numbers, and it's often hard to get current statistics to back up something like that. And people like look at you know, they squint and say, I don't believe what he's saying. But now you've got actual bona fide numbers to sit there and say, we are a big gosh darn deal. Us fishing and all of our co-sports, and when you think about it, they all do interlock. Most people do more than one, and a lot of times you mix the other outdoor recreational activities in with fishing. It's very, very tightly related and combined. And you can point to that and say, hey, we're a big deal. Pay attention, gosh darn it. Don't ignore us, which I think was a tendency in the past. We didn't get our just due.
Absolutely. Heard of it. So we actually went the legislative route to get the Rec Act passed. This could have blown up in our face, quite frankly. We didn't know what it was going to happen. All of the data and the, you know, economic impact activity that we have that we've always used before has been about consumer spending, which is very much a top-down approach. So consumer spending being gear, for your footwear, your equipment, your services, your vehicle purchases, and then on top of that, trip and travel expenses. So if you're taking a trip that has a plane and a hotel and lift tickets and guides and lessons and more. So we've always had that information, but we never knew specifically what was going to be gross domestic product. And the difference here is, and this was a big education for me, actually. I didn't really know what the differences were going to be. But gross domestic product is the wholesale value of products that are made here in the United States. So if you buy a fishing rod for $100 and the wholesale value of that rod is $75, if that rod is made in China, only $25 gets counted toward the GDP.
That makes sense.
If the rod was made here in the United States, all $100 gets contributed to the GDP. Now, if you think about outdoor recreation products, a lot of them are made in foreign countries. Boats and RVs are primarily made here in the United States, and a lot of engines. But other than that, there's a lot that's being made overseas. So the dollars and cents on what's being spent on those items aren't necessarily contributed to GDP. What's also not included are travel expenditures that are within 50 miles of home. If you're doing an outdoor recreational activity close to home, the expenditures that you might have around that activity aren't necessarily counted to the GDP. So we're still 2% of the overall economic impact in this country, even with those items excluded. So that's what's even more surprising about it, that we are still that big.
Yeah, most of the trips we take are within 50 miles. I think earlier one of the most impressive things I heard you say was a statistic that most other groups that were being counted grew at 2.8%, and we grew at 3.8%. That's a third better. That growth has to mean something to people who make decisions about our industry and how we're counted.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's such a big focus on getting outside and enjoying our outdoor spaces, on parks, on forests. You know, on the fishing side, we have a goal of 60 and 60, which is increasing our number of annual anglers from 46 million anglers to 60 million anglers, doing that within 60 months. So all of us on the outdoor rec side are really pushing for more and more people to enjoy our public spaces. And, you know, there was this, you know, several years ago, there was this sort of idea that millennials don't go outside. They're constantly on their screens. They're stuck inside. Well, those millennials are now having kids, and those kids want to do family activities outside, and they're getting their parents outside. So we're really seeing a movement, and we're seeing a lot of growth. There are new companies popping up all the time. All of our trade shows are very, very well attended, and people learning and exploring new activities. So there's a lot of hope for this industry, even though we're already doing really well.
Unbelievable. That is really, really good to hear. And I do understand that marketing to the kids is so important. And it's not necessarily selling products, because that's not what our industry is really all about. It's getting people involved in the activities, and the purchasing of the products and will fall in line after that. But we want to get people involved. And I think the thing that we do have to realize is that kids love the outdoors. Kids love to camp. Kids love to fish. They love to hike. They love to recreate outdoors. And as adults, we have to stop repeating this mantra of they want to be tied to their screens. I really don't think so. I think that's something that we suppose is a fact, but is not truly a fact. I think that given a choice, the kids would rather be outside, and we should take that into consideration and go with that instead of following this idea that they want to be on electronic devices.
Well, electronic devices at this point are seamless to any activity that we do. So it's not your face isn't just in the phone, just doing something on the phone. You interact with the phone in all of your activities, whether you're on a road trip or you're skiing or you're doing something else, it's with you, and that's okay. You know, we want people to share and experience, but people are the youngest set now. You know, this is so seamless for them that we're, as an industry and other industries as well, are really embracing digital technology in combination with outdoor recreation. Besides the fact that it just promotes more and more fun, right? You know, you're sharing what you're doing outside, and you're sharing what you've caught, or, you know, how much air you got, you know. It's all part of the process at this point. So we certainly don't think that way anymore. We know that people are sharing more and more and more, and it's just encouraging. So,
oh, fantastic. Well, you know what? I am so happy you joined us today to bring us this good news. I just couldn't be any happier than to hear what you brought us today. And one of the reasons we always enjoy having Liz Ogilvie with us, right, Dave? She's the director of Keep America Fishing. She's the chief marketing officer for the American Sport Fishing Association. And she's also our friend, and we're happy to have her on. Please join us again soon, Liz.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, thank Liz. You. Thank you very much. We look forward to her next visit, Liz Ogilvie. That segment was brought to you by Calcutta an outdoor company that builds gear and apparel for those with a passion for the outdoors. We Fish ASA will be right back.
Your outdoor adventures start at the Progressive Insurance Northwest Sports Show. With 300 boats, over 300,000 square feet of exhibit space, it's the best place to see and buy outdoor gear. Save on boats, fishing, hunting, and outdoor gear, marine electronics, and ATVs. Book trips with outfitters and resorts, too. The Progressive Insurance Northwest Sports Show, March 22nd through 25th.
Get on down to the sports show.
At the Minneapolis Convention Center. Tickets at northwestsportsshow.com.
The Sports Show.
The outdoors is more than just a profession for us here at Big Rock Sports. As avid anglers, hunters, and outdoor enthusiasts, it's our passion. So advocating on behalf of the outdoor sporting goods industry is a top priority for us. Big Rock Sports is proud to serve as the voice and advocate of outdoor sporting goods retailers across the nation. Big Rock Sports works tirelessly to protect our fisheries and anglers' rights. Big Rock Sports, we are here for you.
Costa, built by hand, the clearest lenses on the planet deserve frames that can take you to the ends of the earth and back. That's why we build ours with components that are tough enough to perform under almost any conditions and from cutting-edge materials that help us preserve the environment. Costa.
The world gets duped every time. Some new invention or technology comes along and we're told it's all to make life simpler. It's always the exact opposite, isn't it? Fortunately, we still have fishing, the simple drama of you at one end of a line and a fish at the other end. Of course, more often than not, there's a St. Croix rod in between. St. Croix, handcrafted fishing rods for over 65 years. St. Croix, the best rods on earth. Welcome back to We Fish ASA. Folks, We Fish ASA is brought to you by the proud industry members of the American Sport Fishing Association. Big, big winner as our next guest. It's a Canadian, went south to the Harris Chain, won the big check, $125,000 for catching a whole bunch of bass in a recent FLW tournament. This guy is a hot stick for sure. I say because he's from Canada. He's been flying under the radar a little bit. You're going to hear a lot more about our next guest. He is Chris Johnston. Welcome, Chris. How are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you guys doing?
Doing okay. Was that fair to say you're flying under the radar because you're Canadian?
Well, I'm trying to make a name for myself down here. I had a good first year on the tour. This is my third year, and the second year I had a bit of a slump, and trying to start this season out right, and it's been good so far.
You did fine. Heck, you're in the top 10, 33% of the time. That's pretty gosh darn good in my book. You haven't been fishing that long. You're approaching the half million mark. That's pretty impressive. But I'm still on this Canadian thing. In the back of my mind, something's telling me you should be fishing for walleye.
I like fishing for walleye, but that's just recreational. I do it for 2 or 3 weeks when I'm at home. But I'd much rather be catching bass any day of the week.
I can definitely respect that. And you're from Peterborough, Ontario, which is. It's a little over an hour outside of Toronto, a couple hours outside of Ottawa. You've got
That's
one.
Correct. You don't.
Yeah. What?
Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
No, I said that's correct, and we're kind of right in the heart of the core of the lakes, and it's like world-renowned fishing for walleye, bass. Within 2 hours, we've probably got 400 or 500 lakes, and I grew up fishing there. It's pretty spoiled.
Oh, that's phenomenal. But you know what? It's got to be a disadvantage because so many professional bass fishermen are from the South. The tournaments are skewed to the South. You know, they have moved into the North. Bass tournaments are learning that smallmouth provide for some big bag weights, and it's okay to go north for those. But having to tow a boat from Peterborough to Florida and Mississippi and Texas, that puts a lot more pressure, a lot more stress, a lot more work on your shoulders, doesn't it?
It's worst part about this is you're a part-time truck driver. You're putting a lot of hours on, and obviously the expenses add up too, and it takes 2 days on average to drive to most of the events.
Yeah, that's a lot of time on, away from home. It's a lot of time on the road, back and forth. You don't get a lot of time in between events, so you got to deal with that. And a lot of people, I've heard them say, when people put professional athlete or athlete on their cards for their for FLW and the major league fishing and all of the high end tournament circuits, say, oh, they're not really athletes. They don't get what you do in a day, do they?
some get it. If you hadn't been in the water with me today, people think, fishing, that's fun. You go just cast a line in the sun, get a suntan. It was just over 30 degrees today, like high upper 30s, but it poured rain. And I forgot my boots in the truck, and literally, we probably got, I don't know, a couple inches of rain, and it was windy, nasty. So there are some fun days fishing, but then you get days like today, and it's a lot like work.
You were fishing, you're pre-fishing for an FLW tournament, I believe Lake Lanier in Georgia, correct?
Correct, and I left most of my warm gear back in Canada because I figured Georgia, it's been hot. Well, I brought a nice cold snap down with me, and it's been chilly the last couple of days. And the morning of the tournament is actually supposed to be just below freezing.
Oh, unbelievable. Let me ask you a question. Let's open up some people's eyes to a lot of things. I think you just did with that question. You're out there pre-fishing today. What time did you get on the water?
I think about 6:30 you get on the water. That's sunrise is about 10 to 7, so you're allowed on the water at 6:20. And then I got off the water at 6:40.
Hey,
so it's 12 hours.
And by the way, I really like the fact that you just said a boot 6:40 to prove that you were from Canada. In case anybody thought I was lying about where you came from, you just nailed it. Thank you very much. But you spent 12 hours on the water today. That's a lot. And people say, oh, that's a, you know, people that go recreational fishing aren't doing that. And you're not sitting there taking a break and eating a sandwich. You're spending that 12 hours productively. You don't have time to fool around or take a break, right?
No, I usually eat my sandwich when I'm just driving to the next spot. That's about the only break I take.
All right, I wonder this now. When you go out and a couple of days that tournament will happen, and the takeoff time is whatever early in the morning, and then you're done at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, sometimes you're not done till 5. Then you got to wait to weigh your fish. A lot of times you're not getting back to the hotel until about 6 or 7.
Okay, my question is, what is the philosophy of you fishing until 6:30 at night on practice day when on tournament day you're not fishing that late? You're fishing in practice at times where you're not going to be really fishing. Why do you do that? Why don't you stop at 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock or whenever the tournament ends?
Well, I need all the time on the water I can get. And the more time on the water, the more advantage you're going to have. So if I can find two spots between 3 o'clock and 6, the fish will probably be there still during regular tournament hours. So I'm just trying to optimize my fishing time is all.
Fair enough. Whose electronics are you using?
I'm using Garmin's, and they are invaluable this tournament because I'm doing a lot of deep graphing, looking for brush piles and stuff. So you're just looking at your side imaging and clear view. So
you've been at,
yeah.
How old are you, Chris?
28.
You're 28. You're a young guy, and you've been fishing FLW for 3 seasons. You've been pro for 6. So it's probably unfair. Even in the 6 years you've been a pro, electronics have changed exponentially. Can you imagine fishing in the 1990s with the electronics they had then, or the 1970s? It's so unbelievable now, isn't it?
My dad fishes with me a lot, and he just shakes his head because he used to have to line up a point, a flag, and kind of line that up and go fish in the lake, where now we can fish within 5 feet of where we caught the fish in the middle of the lake. So it's changed the game completely.
What kind of boat are you running?
I'm running a Ranger 521L. It's a new rig, and I'm super happy with it, with an Evinrude G2 250, and that package, I wouldn't trade it for anything. And Ranger Cup is a huge sponsor of FLW, and if you're what they call Ranger Cup qualified, basically if you own a Ranger, you get extra bonus. So the last tournament, I won 100, and then Ranger paid me an extra $25,000 for running their product. And so it's a huge incentive if you're getting into fishing tournaments to run a Ranger.
Who's trolling motor?
I run the Minn Kota.
Yeah.
I'm not sponsored by them by any means, but that spot lock that I have, it comes in pretty handy. That was one of the keys to win in the last tournament, actually. I hit spot lock and never moved.
Between the advancements in the sonar and the advancements in the trolling motors, in particular that spot lock, I hate to say this, but it's like they're making fishing so much easier.
No, it makes it a lot easier to find the spots. The fish get more pressured now, though, so they're getting smarter as well. So the fish are getting more accustomed to our ways. So we're having to adapt, trying different techniques, different baits, lighter line. And so it's not easy still, but it makes it a little easier to find the fish.
Now, do you have a preference between smallmouth and largemouth? And the second part of that question, does the fact that you can catch smallmouth up north and possibly have to use lighter line help you down in the south for the largemouth on the tougher days?
100% it does. For these spotted bass, I'm using the same techniques I use for smallmouth up north. The only difference is I'm using a little different bait on my drop shot. It's catered more to like a finesse worm or something like that, 4 or 5 inches long, whereas the smallmouth, I'm using like a little shad or a goby imitation.
No, that's good. And do you have a preference on catching smallmouth or largemouth or spots or not really? Whatever's going to get you that big check.
Whatever pays the bills.
Yeah, that makes sense. We got about a minute left before we got to take a break here, but do you have a favorite way to catch them?
I love fishing Okeechobee, Harris chain, heavy grass. I like flipping, using like a 7.5 foot G Loomis rod with 65-pound power pro, and that's the way I like catching them. I like fishing grass.
That's a good way to catch them, especially if they're there. But how about a favorite lake?
My favorite lake's got to be Thousand Islands. That's close to home. It's about 2.5 hours away, and it's got some of the biggest smallmouth, I think, in North America. So you can't really beat that.
Excellent. Hey, we need to take a quick break, let our sponsors have a little airtime to try to sell some of their wares. If you don't mind, we're going to put you on hold while we do that. Folks, we're on with Chris Johnston. Just won a huge $125,000 check on the FLW down at the Harris Chain of Lakes. This guy's a good fisherman, a Canadian, bringing his skills down, crossing the border, and teaching us his ways. He's going to give us some more tips on how to catch more fish and bigger fish when We Fish ASA comes right back.
Don't miss the Progressive Insurance Northwest Sports Show, March 22nd through 25th at the Minneapolis Convention Center. Save on boats, fishing, hunting, and outdoor gear, travel, and ATVs. Buy tickets at northwestsportsshow.com. The Sports Show.
You have a tackle box filled with scissors, nail clippers, knives, and snippers for cutting different kinds of fishing line? Well, throw them all away. Instead, use the Stingray Line Cutter. It's quick, easy, and effective. Mount it on your tackle box, the side of your boat, or wear it around your neck. The Stingray Line Cutting System cuts all lines and never fails. It's got double stainless steel blades, it's built to last, and it's affordable. Find out more at www.stingraylinecutter.com.
Bass anglers have heard it all when it comes to manufacturers having the best casting reel. Well, Daiwa can back it up with the Tatula SV. The Tatula SV has three key features that make it the most versatile casting reel on the market today. The SV spool is a lightweight aluminum spool allowing for long control light lure casting. Mag4Z gives you the option to set a precise casting range no matter what lure or wind situation. The Daiwa T-Wing system reduces line angle and friction when casting. Distance, control, and finesse like no other reel on the market. Tatula, the ultimate finesse long cast system designed by Daiwa.
Costa, we've been on this journey since 1983. Born from necessity on Florida's coast, we're a high-performance eyewear maker obsessed with the evolving technology of our products. Protecting the environments where our gear is used and inspiring people to see what's out there. Costa.
Welcome back to We Fish ASA. We're brought to you by the proud industry members of the American Sport Fishing Association. And please, don't forget, check us out. We're on Facebook. Like us, share us, do all that social media kind of stuff that old guys like me are learning more about every day. So please check us out on Facebook. Here's somebody that we're happy to check out. Darn good fisherman. News had to catch bass. Caught about $125,000 worth of bass just a couple weeks ago. From Peterborough, Ontario, he is Mr. Chris Johnston. Welcome back, Chris.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Hey, who do you travel with?
I travel with my brother. So he's also from Peterborough. And my dad comes to about 50% of the event. So that always helps out with the driving and having three people, so if you need a break driving on those long hauls, he doesn't mind jumping behind the wheel every once in a while.
Do you have a competition that goes on the side with your brother? Your brother is Corey?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, and yes, are you guys competitive?
We grew up playing sports, so there's always a rivalry between us. We obviously want to see each other do well, but there's always you're always giving the other guy a hard time, whoever does better or obviously whoever does worse. So, and we have a bunch of friends back home that they actually have side bets on us, so who does better. So it gets pretty heated.
Oh, cool. Hey, you're fishing big time FLW Tour. It's the, you know, you're in the major leagues on this thing. And I know when we were setting up the call earlier before we started taping, Dave was talking to you about fishing Sturgeon Bay Open up in Wisconsin and some other things. A lot of people don't realize there are some huge, huge bass tournaments, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Ontario, that draw some of the best fishermen in the world and actually fly under the radar because they're not FLW, they're not Bassmaster, they're like one-time things on Lake of the Woods, Rainy Lake, whatever, and you have fished a lot of those. That's got to be a real education to participate in stuff like that.
Those are some of my favorite tournaments. They're almost like jackpot tournaments. They're one-offs, and a lot of times the reason so many guys like myself, I travel about 17 hours to get to Sturgeon Bay, it's because the fishery is so good. I want to go there to catch world-class smallmouth every spring, and Rainy Lake's the same, Ontario's the same. Part of the reason they're getting some of these good fields is because the fisheries are so good. And then when you go there, you're competing against some of the best locals there is, and you're drawing in some pros from all over. So you're getting some really good competition in these tournaments, even though they're not named a bass or FLW tournament.
Yeah, it's funny because if you look at the list of entrants or you look at the results afterwards, you scratch your head and say, wait, look at it. Here's a couple of Lindners that are fishing this. Lindners don't fish tournaments anymore. You know, not the Al's and the Ron's, but the kids still do. And they do that because That's the level. Nobody's scared to say, oh, dang it. Nick and Troy Linder signed up for this tournament. We don't have a chance. Nah, guys sign up and say, oh, they're in there. We're going to kick their butts. That's how competitive those tournaments are.
Yeah, and you want to beat them, just have bragging rights over them. You may not want it, but you beat some of the top names, and that's good enough.
Does fishing a tournament on a huge lake like that do anything for teaching you how to fish some of these lakes you're going to on FLW? Not that the lakes aren't big, but a rainy lake certainly has a different composition, a different character than the lakes that you're going to on the FLW tour.
I would say no, not necessarily, to be honest. All these lakes are different, but you do kind of learn that different ends of the lakes can fish completely different. So, like, the south end of a lake can fish completely different than the north end when you're fishing 40, 50-mile lakes. It's going to vary from lake to lake, but I guess it does a little bit, but you just have to have an open mind going into the tournament.
Corey, did you fish, or Chris, did you fish college at all?
No, I didn't. I started fishing, my first tournament when I was 11, and I fished my first Costa tournament when I was 18 as a boater, and I just jumped straight into those.
Okay, and a follow-up question is, what do you think about all these high school and collegiate teams that are coming up behind you? Because you're young enough at 28 that these guys are going to want to, you're the guys that they're after.
Yeah, it's great to see for the sport.
Absolutely.
The more competition, the better. And now that it's in high school, people are getting scholarships for it. It's going to do wonders for the sport, and social media is really growing it as well. And it'll be interesting to see where bass fishing is in 20 years.
It's going to be, I think the fields will be bigger. I think the purses will be bigger. At least that's what I hope. Loving this industry and being in it for over three decades, I'm hoping to see that. And I think it's the biggest thing that has happened to our sport in at least a decade, high school and collegiate fishing. You got any high lofty goals for your career at 28?
Angle of the Year is a big one in my book. That's kind of the most prestigious. You can get lucky and win a tournament, but Angle of the Year, you got to be consistent for a full year.
Yeah, and I think you've got what it takes to do that. You know, I think that's a good goal. That's a good goal for you to have. Let's talk about sponsors. You're doing well for only been on the FLW circuit for 3 years, but you've got a little bit of room on your jersey for possibly a couple of other names. How does that work? How are you doing in that regard? When did you pick up your first sponsors, and how is the pursuit of more sponsors going for you?
I was pretty lucky growing up. My dad was in the competitive fishing. He only did it in Ontario, but he had some big name sponsors, and I got to know him pretty well growing up. So I was kind of sponsored at 14 by Shimano. And then in the last 4 or 5 years, I picked up some big ones, though, after doing well in the Costa and starting the tour. For instance, Costa Sunglasses. My title sponsor is Under Armour. They've been great to me. I've been with them for 5 years, but after I had a really good year on the tour on year one, I finished second in Angle of the Year. They stepped up to the plate big time, and I signed a pretty good contract with them. And like Power Pole, Ranger, just as I've progressed, the sponsors I've had for 5, 6, 7 years, they've really stepped up to the plate as I've taken my game to the next level.
Excellent. You know, now you just won a big tournament, and I know it doesn't work this way, but I'm sure a lot of people listening think this. All of a sudden, your phone start ringing, and you're getting voicemail messages. Hi, we want to talk about sponsoring you. Does that happen? I don't think it does.
No. There's a lot of like interviews and write ups, but no, there's not people knocking down your door to give you sponsors. That's for sure. And the ones that kind of are usually product, and product's great. but it doesn't pay the bills.
Yeah, it's tough walking into that bank with a sack full of lures and saying, here you go, here's my mortgage payment for the month. They don't really like cooperating with that. No, I do understand that. There's a lot more to it, and people don't realize the effort that you have to put in, not only when the season is over and you're spending your winter doing the business end of it, but you're working sponsors in different ways when you're not fishing, when you're driving to competitions. You're doing interviews that you can tell your sponsors that you're doing interviews to promote products. You know, it's like a 24/7 job, the business end of fishing. You know, fishing is the practice days and the tournament days. The business end of it is all the rest of the time.
Yeah, and our season ends in like October, but that's when you get busy, almost in August actually, because big companies, they're making their budget and they have to have it done for September and October. So you're doing resumes, you're doing paperwork, and you're trying to get some of these big sponsors, because the big sponsors, they don't usually come knocking on your door. Even if they say, I'd like to look at sponsoring you, they want a whole bunch of paperwork. They want your social media numbers. A lot of them want PowerPoint presentations now. It's a full-time job just doing that in the fall, and hopefully you land a couple of those sponsors.
Yeah, hopefully you do.
It's interesting, and then you can't slack. A lot of the companies, they want quarterly reports as well throughout the year of different things you're doing, so it keeps you busy.
Is there anywhere on the rest of the tour that you're looking forward to or not looking forward to on the schedule?
I think Smith Lake in Alabama is going to be a tough tournament. I've never been there. It's going to be post-spawn, spotted bass, and I'm just not familiar with the lake. It's a reservoir. There's no grass, and I could do well, but that's the one I'm a little nervous about, that's all.
Hey, are you strictly fishing FLW this year?
Yeah, I wish I could be going to Sturgeon Bay, but unfortunately an FLW tournament conflicts with it.
Okay.
FLW, and then I'll do a tournament every weekend back in Ontario come June.
Excellent. No, that's a good thing. It's good to keep busy. It's difficult with the demands of the tour and working in all of those practice days. It makes it difficult to fit anything else in. But that's what it's all about, and that's what you've chosen to get into, and that's what you're going to be dealing with. So I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You're all set for this, and I know you're up to the challenge, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love it. The biggest thing I love about this sport is the competitiveness. I grew up playing hockey, baseball, lacrosse, and unfortunately you get older and you can't play it anymore, but you still have that competitiveness in fishing that you can do till you're 60, 70 years old if you want to. So I don't think I'll give it up anytime soon, that's for sure.
I know you're not. You're going to win a lot of money on your way to your golden years. I have no doubt about that. You've been a fine example to people for what a professional angler should be, and you got nothing but success coming to you, and we wish you the best of luck, Chris Johnston.
I really appreciate it, guys.
Not a problem. We'll check in with you again next time you win a big six-figure check in a tournament. Congratulations, and we'll talk to you soon. Chris Johnston from Peterborough, Ontario. Excellent, excellent bass fisherman. Thanks for being with us.
No problem, guys.
Well, that takes care of another week's edition of the We Fish ASA podcast. I'd like to thank our guests. We had Miss Cheryl Smith with us representing St. Croix, representing the fishing team of Kranz and Smith as well. We also talked to Liz Ogilvie. She runs Keep America Fishing, does a great job doing that. Gosh, she had some great news for us. And then we finish with Chris Johnston from Peterborough, Ontario, Canadian bass fisherman. I also like to thank our sponsors, St. Croix, the best rods on earth, Calcutta, makers of a line of products that fit your fishing lifestyle and passion, Costa Sunglasses, see what's out there, and Daiwa. Take a look at that new Tatula SP reel. You'll love it as much as we do here at We Fish ASA. Remember that We Fish ASA presents a new episode of our one-hour podcast every week. It's available 24/7 at iTunes, via the free app at Stitcher Radio, and at our website, wefishasa.com. Speaking of our website, if you like what you hear, send us an email at wefishasa.com. If you don't like what you hear, send us that info too. We're big guys. We can take it. If you'd like to hear somebody on We Fish ASA that we haven't had on yet, send us an email. Let us know. We love to interact with the people who listen. We will see you next week. Now, let's go fishing.
I'm professional angler Kevin Van Dam, and people always ask me, what's the best and easiest way to catch fish? Well, that's simple. Keep our waterways clean and free of litter. You know, tossing your worn-out lures in the lake is not a winning move. Pitch them in the trash. Do your part and join me. Visit keepamericafishing.org and pledge to pitch it.